Welcome back, family. This week we have a very special guest, Allison Faust. This amazing woman has written for some of the funniest shows and movies in the last 25 years and has been a trailblazer for women in media. In addition to working with multiple generations of the Wayans family, Wanda Sykes, Mike Epps, and others, she has also written for hit movie franchises including Bring It On and Scary Movie. Now, Allison is not only one of the funniest guests we've had, but her take on age and gender in the entertainment business is sure to make you think. Now, we can't wait for you to hear what she has to say. So let's go. Let's kind of start at the beginning, if you don't mind. How do you go from Compton to, you know, known writer, producer, director, editor? Where's the path start?
Well, for me, I was always a writer. Even as a kid, I knew I wanted to be a writer when I grew up. So, and I didn't pursue it. Once I started working at Cal State Long Beach, I figured I would just retire and write a book because I read a lot.
Right.
You know, that was always my passion. And then things changed. I ended up quitting my job, and I used to listen to this radio station where they did sketches, 92.3 The Beat. And I just one day faxed them a sketch, you know, not even looking for a job, just thinking this might be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so they called me and said they would pay me freelance. And I thought, well, hell, I made it. You know, that was it. $50 a sketch.
So you just sent it in, like, no contacts, nothing. You just, here, take a look at this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's brave.
Yeah, I don't know what made me do it. Because they weren't requesting anything. I just, something told me I could do what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I type one up and send it off. And they actually called me and said that it was funny and they were willing to pay me freelance. So I did that for like a month before Keenan Ivory Wayans called the station and they asked who did one of my sketches. And they told him. And they hooked us up. And so, I had a meeting with his executive producer. And a week later, I basically had the job.
So wait, you went from just off the streets to a month later, Keenan Ivory Wayans says, you're good enough. Come, let's do this.
Yeah, it was crazy because I met with his executive producer.
Uh-huh.
And she told me, okay, we need monologue, we need bumpers, we need sketches. And I was like, okay, wait a minute, what's a bumper? Like, I didn't know the Hollywood terms. I didn't know the format. Like, all my sketches were on the left-hand margin.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything. But she called me a week later and told me to come up there, like, on a Saturday. And I was like, okay. And I went up there, and she put me in a room with the other writers, and they were all guys. But I was like, okay, I got a bunch of guy cousins. So we basically just sat there and shot the shit. And then we moved to a bigger room with a big table.
Mm-hmm.
And Keenan came in, and I thought, I'm not supposed to be here. But he saw me, and he came over and introduced himself like he had to do that. I was starstruck. Like, I grew up in L.A., but I was in Compton. So, mm-hmm. like, we didn't see celebrities and stuff over there. We just weren't used to it. So that was honestly the first celebrity I really met. And I was just like, it freaked me out. But I just sat there. And they started what I didn't realize was a pitch meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So people would go around telling their ideas. If it was funny, I laughed. If it wasn't, I was just like, oh, okay. And then I realized it was coming around to me, and I was like, I can't pitch to Mr. In Living Color. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
And so it got to me, and I looked at my sketches, and I said, here, this one's funny. And I slid it down the table to him, and you could hear the guys in the room sucking their breath like, oh, that is not cool. But he took it, and he read it. He said, you're right. It is funny. And he called on the next guy who was also new, and he stood up like he was on a Broadway play and started pitching. At the end of the meeting, Keenan came over and said, welcome to the team. and I had a job.
So did you think you had made it at that point, or it was still kind of a surreal thing for you?
Oh, it's so surreal. Because right after that, they sat me in the room with the line producer, and he told me how much money I would make a week. And I thought, well, he must have made a mistake, or I had a stroke. Because my head literally exploded. I was like, that's how much I made at Cal State Long Beach in a month.
Right.
And then he said it again, which I didn't even realize was just WGA minimum, because I didn't have an agent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he knew that. They all knew I was green. You know, they were getting me while they could. And but after the meeting, I called my mother and told her what happened. And she said, what does he expect you to do for that kind of money?
That's a mom question.
Mama, right? I was like, Mama, let's be honest. That kind of money ain't too much I won't do. I'm like, let's be real.
Mm.
You know, but it was a great experience. It was really scary at first because, like I said, I was still stunned by this whole Hollywood thing. I had already moved out to the Valley, but I really hadn't dealt with that crowd. And but you don't have time to really sit back and be scared. You know, you have to jump in and get involved. And a good friend of mine, Michael Anthony Snowden, the writer on the show, said, hey, Kenan likes you, but you need to speak up because Kenan fires people. So I was like, okay, cool. I went in the next writer's meeting and said a dirty joke, and we were good, you know. But it just kept rolling from there.
So from the Kenan Everwayne show, which honestly, I think it came along at the same time as Vibe had their TV show. And honestly, I don't know about nationwide, but in this area, in the D.C. area, Vibe was nothing. No one wanted to. I mean, I love the people that were on Vibe. So if anybody's listening, I apologize. I would come home back in the day. I was working two jobs, and Kenan Everwayne, I didn't want to talk to my mom or dad. I'm going upstairs to watch that. So how do you go from that high to it was just so unexpectedly gone? What was next?
Well, it's funny. You said everybody's watching. Everybody's watching but my mother. She was watching Jerry Springer. I was like, I don't know. She said, oh, yeah, I saw your little show, but it comes on the same time Jerry Springer, and Jerry's funny. Okay. Yeah. Keenan told me not to feel bad. He said his mother watches Jerry Springer, too. But after that, he called and said that he was doing this movie with Sean and Marlon that they wrote. It was a spoof on scary movies, and we started punching up that. He got like five of us together from the show, and we rewrote that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked it. It was a success. So we did it again for Scary Movie 2. And then, Damon was looking for female writers for My Wife and Kid. And Keenan recommended me. So I went over there and did that. And I had met Wanda Sykes on Keenan's show. So then she got a sitcom, then I went to work from her, and it just kind of snowballed. Like, work got other work, you know? So
when did you feel like you were secure in this writing game?
Oh, that doesn't happen. That never happens.
Okay, if not secure, at least you felt like part of the, I guess, the writing establishment. You weren't the greenhorn anymore. You were someone that they could go to.
I think it's funny because I think after the first show that I was on, which was Kenan's Late Night Show, when that show got canceled, I remember me and Wanda were sitting having drinks, and we got the phone call that the show wasn't getting picked up. So we said, okay, well, let's have another drink. And just kind of especially me, because I was new in the business, didn't really know what to do. I wasn't up on my samples and my spec scripts and stuff like that. So the very first time, it was rough and it was kind of scary, you know. And I called my dad and told him the show got canceled. He said, "Welcome to Hollywood," you know. So after that, By the time I got to my wife and kids, I had agents. So, and between seasons, you know, I thought you're supposed to be working because I grew up working. And they said, well, you need some spec material. So I started writing specs, movies and TV, because I didn't want that to ever be their excuse again for why I wasn't working. When I'm not working, I'm writing. And that gets more work. So once I realized that, I just put in the time to do it. So if somebody comes along, you know, you're ready. Bam, I got this. How about this? You know, that kind of thing.
So I guess let me ask you a question. Let's backtrack a little bit. You said you were always a reader. And how did you, from high school to whenever you started this thing, what helped you start getting the basis and the groundwork in place to become a professional, not just a writer, but a comedic writer? Because it's so much in comedy that is so like timing and, you know, jokes fall flat all the time. How did you not only become a comedic writer, but you were a funny writer?
I think it was my upbringing, because I always liked to write, like I said, from the time I was a kid. But I grew up with really funny uncles and funny cousins. You know, my dad and his brothers were hilarious. And, you know, that was before the internet or cable even. So you'd sit around. We used to go camping. Or they just came over and they would tell these funny stories. And they had natural timing. You know, I didn't know what it was then, but I picked up their timing and their voices and stuff like that. And that's one of the things when I first started my career that somebody said I was good with picking up voices. So it just came, comedy came more natural to me than drama. Drama was like comedy without the jokes. But, you know, once you have that natural timing, you know, people think that's it. That's all you have to do. No, now you have to learn how to tell a story. So there's always more work to be had. You know, you find yourself in a different place. And luckily I had great teachers to help me do that. The people I work with have been fantastic. And then you, all of a sudden, you become that teacher.
So, okay, you've done the TV thing. When did movies come along after Scary Movie? And I guess it's, you were going from one to the next. What was that next big thing where you stepped out there and you moved forward?
Well, it came trying to keep working. So on one break, I wrote a spec film because I didn't have a movie spec. So I wrote that, and it got the attention of Universal Home DVD, like straight to DVD division. And they called and asked me if I wanted to pitch on Bring It On. So I was like, okay. And, you know, it's been a great relationship, but when I first started, this lady, Patty Jackson, who is fantastic to this day, I went in to pitch to them, and before we walked in the room, she said, they never laugh at anything, but don't let that bother you. Just keep going. And I went, well, great. That's what the hell you want to hear right before you go in to pitch the comedy. You don't fucking laugh. So the great thing that taught me that day, as soon as she said that, I said, fuck it. Okay. So I go in there, and this is another big, long table, all white people looking at me. And I start to pitch, and I have this attitude like, I don't care. I think this shit's funny. And they laugh. Yeah, they laugh. And I said, oh, okay, I got them now. And so, you know, I ended the pitch. And what was funny was when I first started, I told them, because she made me a little nervous, so I told the group, and the president was in there. I said, I hate pitching. I'm a terrible pitcher. I said, I'm a great writer, but I just hate pitching. So after I was done and they laughed and stuff, he told me, he said, don't ever say you're a bad pitcher again. He said, that was fantastic. Because it's the worst part of the job. It's like, you're vulnerable, and you go in there and go, okay, judge me, you know. And it's, I don't know a writer who likes it at all. So, but
so was Bring It On yours from start to finish?
I got in on the third one because they had the original movie, and then they had one I'm not sure if that went straight to DVD, but it was a college one, and they wanted to go back to high school.
Okay.
So I started with the third one. And then after that, I think I did three more, and it was either like there was one they wanted to go to Florida. And I was like, okay, but you're making Florida a character, whatever. But this other lady helped write that one. Like, it would go back and forth, you know. But I've written, like, four of them and Honey's. And the way they do it sometimes is just yours, and sometimes they put somebody else on it to help it through. I've been on both sides. Mostly I was working, so I would get the call, like, hey, we got another, bring it on. Can you do something with it? So it's, you know, it's been great. And, you know, it straight to DVD has really helped me make ends meet, you know, between TV gigs, those residuals and those kind of jobs are what you have to do. That's why it's my friends. You got to write more than one thing. And you got to be ready.
So with something like that, do you pull from a like a knowledge base that you already had, or do you have to go out and research high school cheerleading and things like that?
Well, that's interesting because I've never been a cheerleader, never wanted to be, but I did play team sport. And when I thought about it, I said it's the same mentality. They want to win. They're a team. You know, you have to deal with other girls and stuff. And you have to come together as a team. And at the time, well, my daughter played basketball like her whole life up through college. So I was still close to that kind of mentality. And what's great with teenagers, they have a singular goal. They go, I want this. Mm-hmm. They don't even consider what's going to get in their way to get it. So it's great to put, you know, conflicts and stuff in there. And pitfalls for them and see how they react and how they grow over the story. So, you know, you don't have to be a cheerleader to write about a cheerleader on Earth, especially now. I mean, the internet, hey, you can be whatever you want to be. You got to use your imagination. The thing about it right. is that people don't realize you're writing about people. And more often than not, we're all the same. We want the same things. We have both. So whatever the character does for their job or hobby or whatever, it's really second nature to whoever this person you created, how they react to certain things. You know, that's why they could put Sandra Bullock in space. You don't have to be an astronaut to put her up there. You know, you just have to get the technical, like, what are the problems she might face, and then how does this character react? You know, they say write about what you know, but also you write about what you can imagine. As long as, and I hate to say this because logic kills comedy, but to a certain extent, it has to ring true for people to buy into it, you know?
I was on your IMDb page, and you're one of those people where that thing just keeps scrolling. Just keeps scrolling. But I noticed Primetime Emmys.
Uh-huh.
Let me say that again. Primetime Emmys. How do you get, how did you go from bringing on and the Wayne Show to the Primetime Emmys? Where did that? How did that? How?
Well, what happened was Wanda Sykes was going to be one of the hosts.
Okay.
So
okay.
She brought some of her writers along. So it was like me, Lance Crowther. And, oh, that's horrible. I can't think of who else went with us. But,
they're not going to be mad at you.
But we were there to, you know, see jokes that maybe she didn't see or have ideas to pitch to her. And, hey, what if you did this? And, you know, that kind of thing. So it just kind of is another gig, you know? It was another gig. It sounds great, but
so was it hard?
No, because, you know, you're with your friends and you're having fun. But I did have, like, a couple surreal moments. Like, you're sitting backstage and, like, Walter Cronkite walked by, and I went, what the hell am I doing here? You know, it's like, do they know who I am? And I'm just this little girl from Compton. There was there was somebody else. I think Helen Mirren came over and gave Wanda a compliment, and it's just so weird.
Mm-hmm. You were waiting for the tap on your shoulder to tell you you weren't supposed to be
come,
there?
Come with us. Well, you've been found out. Let's go. And I know you got credentials. Still, it's time to bounce. Yeah. But, those moments, there are times when you're looking out at that audience and you see all these famous people and you go, but I'm just this little girl from Compton. You know, why am I here? Most of the time you're working so hard, you don't even think about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's nice to have that every once in a while so you can appreciate, you know, what you do.
So did the Primetime Emmys lead to the BET Awards, or was that part of the whole? Because you've got a lot of stuff that's been on BET. Is that just the relationship that you have with them, or is it just every project kind of leads to them?
They're kind of standalone. It's kind of the relationships you build. Like, I did the BET Awards because Jesse is a producer, and I knew Jesse, and he's a good guy, and he was like, hey, come do this for me. So you go, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And those are crazy and fun, but, yeah, it was a relationship I had. The other BET show was because a relationship I had with not only the Wayans, but the showrunner, Devon Shepherd. Second generation win. He called
right.
me, I'm doing the show. You want to be my second? I was like, okay. You know, you do build a community of friends if you're lucky. And most of your work comes through them. You know, somebody you know or somebody you worked with before. Don Rio, who ran My Wife and Kid, has hired me a few times for a different project. And the same with Wanda. You know, that's how you get good recommendations. There's been a few jobs I've had that didn't have anything to do with anybody else, but for the most part, most of your career, you'll work with people you know if they like you.
There's a big dearth of, like, look at me, you're saying dearth in a sentence. Everything you've done that, you know, Love That Girl, Born Again Virgin, you got Real Husband of Hollywood that you were part of, they all have a different tone than just that cookie cutter, you know, let's roll out four black people
right.
and sit them in a room and make them be funny type
right.
of thing. You know, there's something of substance along with the comedy in all of them. Even Real Husbands of Hollywood, which is kind of over the top, is still different than what we were given
right.
before.
I can't take credit for Love That Girl or Real Husbands. Love That Girl, I was hired to do 3 freelance episodes. So
okay.
I went and pitched some that Bentley liked, and he hired me to write them. And then, you know, I watched the show, but I always try to put a little bit of my voice into it. But it's his show. You know, and the same with Real Husband. Ralph Farquhar is running that show. So I had never worked with him before. And he called me in for a meeting. And so we worked together for a little bit. Like I could do like 7 episodes before my next gig or 7 weeks before my next gig. And again, they've already established that show and what the voice is. So I just go in to help and do what I can do and, you know, try to get stories approved, that kind of thing. As far as second generation Wayans, knowing Devon Shepherd, I knew it would be different. You know, I knew it wouldn't just be what you're used to. And again, that goes back to whoever the showrunner is. And I agreed to do that show, but I knew there were some characters, some female characters in there. I told him, I said, I'll do it as long as they're a little different. You know, I understand we have to have a baby mama. I'm fine with that. I'm a baby mama. But if she's angry, if she's crazy, I need to know why. I need to know what she gave up in her life to be in this situation. I need to know what he did to get her here, or what she's not getting. I need to make her a whole real person and not just a stereotype, you know. And with the other character, that's terrible. I can't remember her name. She plays our office assistant from The Fresh Prince.
I know who you're referring to. See, now you're going to get both of us in trouble.
I know. Oh, I can see her lovely face.
I blame
too.
You.
But regardless, you know, Tatiana Lee. I said, regardless, you know, I want her to want something. I don't want her just to be the butt of their jokes. I want her to be able to have her own comeback, and I want her to have goals, you know, because she was playing the assistant. I said, she has to be more than that. And he was more than cool with that because, you know, Devon likes strong women, and he likes writing good women. So in that way, I thought our show was great, and it came off a little different. By then, not too much later, his wife created a show, Born Again Virgin, and she wanted me on board. And I thought, that was fantastic. I get to write about three young black women? Oh, yeah, we're going to do this. So I watched the pilot, and the first thing I thought was, I have to break them all down. I have to give them flaws. I have to give them complications, especially Eva. Because she is great, but she doesn't walk on camera without you thinking she's a diva. Like, she's just, there's this model elegance. I was like, oh, I'm going to have fun tearing her apart. And I told her when she...
Almost like a Diane
Carroll. Yeah, yeah. And I told her when she came in, I said, oh, I'm going to break this character down. And she was so excited about it, you know, because that's how you fall in love with a character. You give them flaws and you make them more human and more like you. And as beautiful as this girl is, I had to make her normal, you know? If things couldn't be perfect with her. And all the girls, too. And they were so game to do it and so funny. And still, I'm proud of that show.
Before we get into Uncle Buck, which I really want to talk about as well, I don't know if you caught the, let's just call it ignorance, that Stacey Dash spewed out. But she had some very interesting things to say about BET and boycotting the Oscars and all that. Did you catch that? When I listened to it, I think my first reaction was just, did she know there was a camera rolling? So I guess let's start with the idea that there's a lack of diversity in Hollywood. Well, it's not even an idea, it's a fact.
It is.
Is that something that comes up when you're writing that you want to say, okay, I want this part to be for a person of color, and how hard is it to push it from, you know, an idea to a reality?
I just watched a show the other day where Shonda Rhimes said when they were casting Grey's Anatomy, they only brought in white people. And she was like, no, I need to see everybody. And there's this thing that people will tell you, when you're writing spec scripts, don't put race in there, you know, and which is fine. It's worse if they say, you know, make them white. But when I read a few of her pilots, she didn't put race in there, but she didn't have to. You know, they were people who you could tell who they were just by reading them. So the diversity thing has always been an issue for black writers, black actors, you know, and that's my fear, that they'll fix it by putting, nominating black actors, but there'll be white people writing for those black actors. And that's something I think that Hollywood really needs to work on, because we need to tell our stories. And, you know, I'm not one to go, this is a black story. But if I feel like, you know, my lead is black, that shouldn't be a problem. You know, because I try to tell human stories regardless. I'm a girl from Compton, but I know people are more alike than they are different. They're just in different locales, you know, put under different situations. But that shouldn't restrict me to only having the right black movie, you know. But as far as Stacey, God bless her. God bless her. Here's the thing. There's always a Stacey Dash. Because there's always going to be this token spokesperson for that side who props you up to say the things they're not really supposed to say. So then now Fox can go, well, we didn't say it, she did. You know, so they can seem less racist, you know. And unfortunately, hey, it's fine. Black people have different opinions. But don't go sell people out. You know, don't prop yourself up on TV and go, oh, we need to do this and we need to do this. You know, I would have respected her more if she was on BET or if she was talking to Tavis Smiley and did that. You know, it's like your mama used to say, don't show out in front of company. Don't do that.
Right.
You know, that just, it's bad. It's not cool to do that.
I guess kind of puzzled me was just this, there seems to be almost a backlash to what Jada Pinkett and Spike Lee were saying. And I don't think what they were saying was too far off base, is that, you know, it was their decision to boycott. And right or wrong, I don't have an opinion on that. But I think it was Janet Hubert came out and said, you know, how dare you? And it was just a little weird that it seems to be a backlash against them saying we just don't support the Oscars. I don't understand.
Well, here's
that.
The thing. One thing we do really well is fight in public. And I don't care if it's on World Star or if it's on CNN. We don't feel like we have a right to our own opinion. It's okay if we have different opinions about it. But you don't have to call anybody out on it. You know? It's like Spike went on TV this morning. He said, I never called it a boycott. I just said, I'm not going. You know, but it's almost like they force us to choose sides. They don't even have to force us. Aunt Viv came out and did that on her own. You know.
I just didn't understand it. She seemed so
God
angry.
God bless her too, but she's a little bitter. She's a little hurt from 20 years ago. You know, it's like...
She started bringing up checks and stuff. And I said, who said checks?
Oh, she needs to let that go. She needs to let that go. Because it won't help you being that angry.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, like I said, more than that, we all have a right to a difference of opinion. You know, I think it's fine that people have spoken out about the lack of diversity in Hollywood, because it's not just us. You know, Latinos... Asian Americans, if you're not a white male particularly, it's hard. Because even their women after 30 tend to disappear. You know, so it's, that's why I don't want to stick with it's just a black issue, because hell, I'm a twofer. I'm a woman too, and I don't want to go away. I want to be able to tell those stories for women, because I believe people want to see them. You know? And I just think we need variety.
I was thinking about that the other day. I saw an article with Star Wars being so popular. There was a backlash against Carrie Fisher for being an older woman in the movie. And there were some people on Twitter just going off about how she just looked old and worn out. But Harrison Ford still was a god. I was thinking, God, can't people just age?
And not only that, they called her fat. You know, fuck you. Like
she looked like her age.
She looked like a woman her age. But nobody commented when Denzel was on the Golden Globe stage looking a little puffy. Nobody said anything. I'm like, that ain't the size tux he used to wear, but it's okay for a man. You know, it's fine. And, you know, it drives me crazy. But I think she had a great comeback, and she's like, this is who I am. Screw you. You know, I'm not doing that. You know, and her character was too important to leave out the movie.
They worshipped her for, 30 years? The moment she goes on looking like herself,
Which shouldn't even have been a surprise, because it's not like she hides from the camera in real life.
No, at all. And, you know,
they just attack
her. And they had a young girl in there. Why do you need her to look like she's 20? You know, it's dumb. It's dumb.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of pressure on everybody to not be who they are. I'd say squirrel.
Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's a hard business to be in. It's a hard business to be in. But let's talk about Uncle Buck and Mike Epps and how that came about. Because there does seem to be a resurgence of, like, bringing back what was old. But how is it going to be different from the movie from the 80s?
He's black.
Is he?
No.
I was unaware.
Everybody's going to know. Trust me. Ain't no hiding it. It don't get much blacker. Mike is there. Will Packer's company got this together. And, you know, I guess Mike's funny. They figured they had a funny setup to do it. So, They got it sold, and they hired two great guys to run it. And then those great guys hired me, and we went and wrote 7 episodes. Very funny episodes, you know, and I think Mike's going to kill it. In fact, he did. He was funny on set. So now you just have to wait for ABC to give it a premiere date and see how the audience responds. He's different in the way that in the movie he was, you know, an adorable nitwit sort of guy. Mike is more charming. You know, he screws up, but he's a very charming guy, and I think that's what gets him over as Uncle Buck. You know.
In my head, I've got this idea of Uncle Junior from Survivor's Remorse plopped down with this suburban family.
I think everybody thinks that. But, you know, there's room for more than one black family on ABC, so let's hope that happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm excited for it. One, you got that 80s baby in me that just says, yeah, bring it back. Cool. Whatever. And then you got Mike Epps, which I'm sold. No, I didn't even need to know a premise. If you just said untitled Mike Epps comedy, I'm what time? I'm there. I really want to say again, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
This was fun.
Oh.
I think that's the word I would use, is fun.
Oh, good. Good.
I really appreciate it again. And you enjoy the rest of your night. And thank you so
much.
Oh,
you're welcome.
Man, I hope you guys enjoyed that one as much as I enjoyed talking to Allison. Man, once again, we just want to thank her for coming on the podcast. And don't forget to check her workout on Born Again Virgin and the upcoming Uncle Buck starring Mike Epps. Family, this has been another episode of View from the Stoop, presented to you by the Brownstone Media Group.